flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said almonds. They don't make it from almonds.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pot pints.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour. I am Matt Bentman, and for this week's programme, I've been talking with Anna Chopp about charity lunches in Cambridge that raise money for paramedics who operate on the border of Ukraine.
I'm Alan Alder, and I've been finding out about a new organisation that aims to bring a greater variety of food trucks to local pitches and to help new startups too.
And I'm Sue Bailey. And it's almost a year now since Pasci Benedetto reopened the Rupert Brooke in Grantchester. And I went along to find out how it's going and what's on the menu.
Also on today's programme, we have local chef Rosie Sykes on jam making and Dee Fisher on spending your holidays working on organic farms.
We'll have our regular features too, free food in Cambridge, local food and drink news, social media updates and, at the end of the programme, our jobs roundup.
So let's begin then with a feature about Ukrainian food and an event called Borscht Time, Ukraine on a Plate. Now, this is a monthly charity lunch fundraiser, and it happens in the centre of town. This week I met with Anna, one of the team leaders who makes Borscht Time happen. And we recorded this sitting on the wall of King's College, where the Ukrainian demonstrations have occurred twice a week for the last 3 years. So we kick off with borscht itself.
There is no unified recipe for it. It was actually also added to UNESCO list, like in terms of food culture and everything. So it is a soup, but Ukrainians will say it isn't, because there are soups and there is borscht. Like if you sit at a table, you will be asked which one you want, because it's like its own separate category. But it is absolutely a soup, and its signature in the deep red color that comes from beetroots, this round ball of red with a bit of sour cream in the center, making this nice red and white contrast. You know, it's very nice. I feel like 90% of people who try it like it. Yeah, from experience.
These charity lunches called Borscht Time are a relatively new event in Cambridge.
So this is the fifth edition, and Borscht Time happens every month. In the beginning, I was very skeptical about it. I was like, it sounds nice, but will we actually be able to do it like consistently? Like, that's the hard part, to retain people who are going to come back and like do it for free in their free time, sacrificing every weekend. But yeah, so far, absolutely. And we get more and more new people, actually, who come, try, like it, and come back again.
I was one of the new ones, having seen the poster whilst walking down Mill Road that Saturday. And when I reached the Borscht Time lunch event, which is just off Downing Street and past John Lewis, there was a queue outside, and new people were coming along who just found out about it too.
So my name is Anna Chopp, and I have been involved in the Borscht Time since the very beginning as a volunteer, and I found it very rewarding, so I'm continuing. Because I've been involved with Cambridge for Ukraine for a long time as like an occasional volunteer, and I do help out with the organization of like other Ukrainian events, but this is like by far the most successful one, and I wanted to become even better.
Cambridge for Ukraine is the umbrella group that organises cultural and educational events in support of Ukraine, doing what they can, and a little more, to help stop the war. You can find out more at cambridgeforukraine.uk, and that's four, as in the number four, Cambridge for Ukraine. Now this event, Borscht Time, Ukraine on a Plate, is a charity lunch fundraiser, and it's getting more popular.
It was the record number of people that attended, 80-something plus. You know, they're not just there to get their food, eat it, and go away. There's a lot of communication happening, which is part of the reason we're doing this. nothing gets wasted because everything goes home. If we have any leftovers, we take them with us. Yeah. Or if nobody else can take it, we leave something for the church residents and like try to label it so it doesn't look frightening, like unknown Ukrainian food. What is this? And then it's a cleanup, and we usually finish about 7. So it's a whole day thing. When it happens once a month, I know like nothing else I can schedule for the day, and the next day will be a recovery one.
So to begin with, everybody is welcome.
Absolutely everybody, yeah. If anything, the more diverse the crowd we get, the better. Like, it's always really nice to see people from different backgrounds. We do have a lot of Ukrainians coming from Cambridgeshire as a whole, like from villages nearby, because there is no dedicated Ukrainian cuisine place as of now in Cambridge. But also we have a lot of locals. Some of them are now becoming regulars, which is so exciting. And maybe they found out they're going to have cherry vareniki, and that's enough to bring any Ukrainian to your door, to be honest. Because it's really, like, it's not that easy to do, because here you have sweet cherries and you need sour cherries to make them. So I think we put a specific order in a Polish shop just to get them, and not frozen, but fresh.
Can we go into some more detail about that dish?
Yeah. So the name is vareniki. And if you have to translate it, it's a thing you boil. And they're basically dumplings, but dessert type of dumpling, which is totally acceptable for Ukrainian. But, and I never thought it can be surprising to anybody before I came to the UK, because vareniki can have a variety of fillings. So you can have like potatoes with mushrooms, you can have meat in them. Cottage cheese is really good. And like cherry buns is on top of the dessert variation. And all of them you serve with sour cream. So regardless whether it's a savory or a sweet dish, you will add sour cream to it. But also you can add some sugar on top or honey. It's like one of my favorite childhood dishes as well, because my grandma had a cherry tree outside of her place and we always had like an abundance. So you would make so many of them and then you just stuff yourself to the brim. And I think that association is really strong for many people. It's a kind of universal experience for Ukrainians.
Is there a chance to offer a few different varieties of that dish at a lunch like this?
Yeah, we usually have at least a couple of versions of vareniki. This time we definitely had like the potatoes and mushrooms kind, and this sweet dessert cherry variety. It's like the most accessible Ukrainian dish as well.
You mean accessible to the British palate?
Yeah, because if I try to offer you some salo, for example, which is basically like a salted, sometimes smoked pork fat, like not lard, but like it's still connected to the skin usually, I have to really convince people to try that. But it was rye bread and a bit of like spring onion is so good. It's really like, it does, people need to open their mind. Trust me, it's good.
That's a really important point that you said there, because I've done some volunteer work for charities. And even when I was just, just raising money in the street, I had so many skeptical people who were very cautious of donating money, and they interrogated me. Like, is all of this money actually going to the cause?
Yeah.
How much of it is going to administrative purposes and so on and so on?
Yeah.
You just clarified there, this money is all going to, I think your poster describes it as the hospitalers.
Yeah, hospitaliers. So they are a well-established organization of Ukrainian volunteer paramedics. So they are not medics per se, they don't have professional training. They're usually people of all walks of life that at some point decided to make a choice and like train as paramedics in their free time. And they also a registered charity in the UK, which is the reason why we decided to try and collaborate with them.
Yeah.
Nothing is left for admin, to be honest. That is all just done for free.
Are there any other interesting dishes?
I would say one is a drink, which is kisil. It's a thick drink, so it's berry-based, but there's also added starch in it, and it's cooked, but it's not jelly-like, so it's something else. It's literally like thick water, and green borscht is really good. It is quite different from the regular one. It is the summer kind. Absolutely fine being vegetarian. Our borscht is actually vegetarian because we try to like be a bit more accommodating to people's requirements and everything. There is a lot of sorrel in it, which is really hard to get, not in any regular grocery shop. So you also have to specially order like canned sorrel. And those cans are usually small because you use, you know, just a bit for yourself, and you get like 20 of them to make a huge pan of it. So it is something you're not going to try anywhere else, I can guarantee it. The only consistent thing is probably borscht. Like, borscht will always be there because it's kind of in the name. And Ukrainians never get tired of eating it as well. Right now we have a summer menu with like cold soup options, for example. And then come winter, we're going to have more of like winter comfort foods, and definitely going to do something like Christmas themed as well.
Well, thanks very much, Anna. You do sterling work for Ukraine and for Cambridge. And when's the next date?
16th of August, and I'll be really glad to see everybody who can attend get a taste of Ukrainian homemade food. Thank you.
So if you fancy trying a traditional Ukrainian lunch, like Anna said, Saturday the 16th of August is the next date. Now, booking in advance is advisable, and you can book via the Eventbrite website and type in borscht time. And you can also find them on Instagram. They are there at Cambridge for Ukraine.
Well, this seems to be in rather bad taste given the dreadful situation in Gaza, but here are details of free food available in and around Cambridge. The information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, and that exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
Mm. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Eva in King's Hedges has three tubs of coleslaw to give away. Coco, just off Queen Edith Way, has a Taste the Difference brown sourdough bloomer, a white sourdough bloomer, and a white wheat flour and barley malt bread with walnut loaf. She also has a multi-seeded farmhouse and plenty more exotic loaves available for collection. And a box of donuts, too, sprinkled with hundreds and thousands. And finally, Shabir in Rose Crescent, I think that's all student accommodation around there, has a tub of Quality Street for anybody who wants it. Now, the strange thing is, in their offer, they've also written 61 Regina Road, which is close to Finsbury Park in London. So I'm not sure which one is correct, Rose Crescent or Regina Road. But either way, you are picking up Quality Street from a Quality Street. And that's all today from our quick look at free food that's on offer on the Olio app.
There's another free app called Too Good To Go, which has unsold food from restaurants, cafes and shops, often at less than half price. They put the items into a magic bag for you to take home instead of throwing them away. And yesterday, when I checked, there was food from Greggs in Cherry Hinton Road, Pret in Market Street, Nine's Global Buffet, Upper Crust and Cafe Nero at Cambridge Station, the Co-op in Sawston, the Norfolk Street Bakery in Station Road, YHA Cambridge, Clayton Hotel, Ibis Hotel, Hotel Duvan, M&S, Londis, Al Pomodoro, Namaste, Noshi, the Cambridge Oven, and more. So it's well worth having a look. Why let good food go to waste?
Well, on to our first news break now for the 26th July 2025. Today, Saturday, there are some rare whiskies on sale in Cambridge Wine Merchants, King Street and Bridge Street stores, including Pappy Van Winkle's Top Shelf Bourbons and some limited edition Scotch whiskies. The whiskies are in limited supply, however.
Daily Bread is trying to raise £20,000 to secure its future, and it has passed the halfway stage, having reached 11,380 when we checked yesterday. They're not out of the water yet, though, but it has given them a big boost, and you can donate via the GoFundMe website. Just search for Daily Bread. When you see a picture of the inside of the shop, you'll know that you're in the right place.
The Geldart pub in Ainsworth Road has limited numbers of jars of Mr. McGee's honey on sale at the moment.
There's a new cafe opened off West Road in the space where Harvey's used to be, and it's called Florey's. It's run by the people who run the Orchard Tea Gardens in Grantchester and the Flock Cafe in Burwash Manor.
There's a very seasonal event on Tuesday the 29th of July at 6 p.m. It's a cricket match between the University Arms Hotel and Brew Board. Beer, wine, food and music will all be available.
Pastor Tap's next opening is the 2nd of August from noon to 6 p.m. You can book via info@pastorbrewing.com. Steak and Honour will be there till 3 p.m. and the brewery is in Waterbeach.
There are regular tastings of Chinese tea, along with guidance on how to brew it like a master, and a selection of Chinese snacks to enjoy between tastings. These are prepared by the chefs at the Dumpling Tree in Pern Road. The next session is 3rd of August, where the focus will be on scented teas. There is free parking and you can book via Eventbrite.
Providence Kitchen, in between Duxford and Stapleford, has a nose to tail. This is flame-cooked evening of British beef, and that is on the 14th of August.
The Flower and Fleece in Horningsea has a Greek supper club on the 16th of August from 5 till 9 p.m. and a beer festival from the 22nd to the 24th of August. That's the news for now, and we'll have more news later.
The Rupert Brook in Grantchester was bought and reopened by Paschke Bernadetto last August, almost a year ago. I thought it was a good time to see what had been achieved there.
Feels like I've been here a long time already. We've been welcomed very much so from the patrons and from Grantchester, supported very well locally, and people from afar coming over have found us since we've moved. But yes, it feels like we've been here a long time, very well received.
And it's a beautiful pub because you renovated it in the sense of putting in quite a lot of work in quite a short space of time.
We took the keys and a business partner, friend of mine, we bought the freeholds and he did the externals and I did the internals. We did everything, refurbed all of the inside, repainted the outside, brand new balcony, from the wall being dropped outside to the bar being shrunk to, as I say, the new balcony. We did everything in 3 weeks and opened on the 29th of August. So, yes, almost a year now.
Tell me about the high points.
Christmas was a very big high point for us. It was like, I've been doing this for 30 years and Christmas felt like something of the days of old, where people came in and had the long lunch and stayed till midnight, 12:30 drinking. Christmas was 7,000 people in December on food. So that's been a really great high for me, and it just sort of allowed us to hit the ground running. And the balcony and external area with the sunshine that we've been having, it's been very well received.
And you're always welcoming and there for the customers, and I think people really do appreciate that and look for you, don't they?
Yes, it's important. It's great to have a great team around me as well. All the guys who've been with me a long time, but customers I've known and served them for coming up for generations, really. I'm feeling quite old that I'm now looking after people for going into generations. But I am, as you mentioned at the beginning, I am here, I'm present, hands-on. So that's very important. It creates an atmosphere, and that's what you need. That's what makes you, that's what sets you apart from other places in this industry, being hands-on.
And tell me a bit more about your chefs and about the food side of things.
Matt King's been with me for over 7 years, and Bartek now coming up for 3 years. They're the mainstays in the kitchen. They're the guys who develop the menus. And we just started a new menu 2 weeks ago, our summer menu. But these guys have been with me a long time. They have experience and they know what the sort of customers that we look after, which is important, the offering that we have to make sure that sets us apart and keeps our customer base happy to keep coming back.
Mm. Because people do like a little bit of difference and they like to see new things, don't they? So can you just give me a flavour of your new menu?
Well, with the summertime, we've got a few twists. So there's personal favourites like the chef with the tomato mozzarella and tuna salad is a twist that we have at home. I have at home in my family, but that sort of item. We've got mainstays at the moment with the steak frites that we've been doing, very popular. But we also come into the season of, we put an extra fish dish on in the summer, apart from the extra salads. So we have the monkfish is very popular in the sea bass. So we have, and with the specials that we do, it's just a very seasonal, like when we can, the asparagus season has just finished and all of that came from Barton.
And you do things like having oysters as well, which not every place does.
No, oysters are, so we range from either Colchester, Malden, or we have Shetland oysters, but we are going through, like Friday was a lovely evening with the sunshine. Obviously our oyster sales have gone up a lot, so we're selling out quite a lot. We're getting them in daily, so we got them in today. We got them in on Saturday because they sold out. We now offer them, it's so popular, we now offer them on Sunday lunchtimes as well because it wasn't on the Sunday menu before, they are now. So yes, oysters are something that we are doing a lot of with a shot of Guinness on the side. When we first took over, I wanted to have separate areas. White tablecloths distinguish the area that we are from upstairs. But what we did which was we put in place back end of November, is the space upstairs. We spent a lot of time refurbishing it, and as I say, the new balcony externally, but internally we redecorated the whole space, put a bar upstairs, but we sealed the room off as well, so it's glassed. Is this what distinguished this place over Christmas? And it's already booked out for a lot of the weekends. Another inquiry today, funnily enough, for the 3rd of December, but this space is being utilised or booked out because it's so exclusive and private. And that also means that some people, we've got a number of bookings and have done a number of bookings where they want exclusive use of the balcony as well. It's a lovely space with the views over Grantchester and the meadows onto one side.
So that's all the positive sides of things. Mm. Just tell me one or two of your more challenging moments, shall we say.
A lot of people in the industry will tell you at the moment that it's staff that causes them the biggest headaches. I'm very fortunate that I have a very loyal spine, from my two guys at the front, Max and Will, to Matt and Bartek out the back. The hardest struggle I found myself here now has been, since the turn of the year, like everybody, costs. From utilities, but food costs at the moment is the hardest thing that we're juggling. And not only do we change the menu once every 2 months, it's hard to pin down our suppliers and keep them to a cost or a unit cost per item for a longish period of time. So we change our menus more regularly because it allows us to meet the demand and keep our prices more competitive, because we change the menu and we are swapping between suppliers or products that we put on our menu. That has been the hardest thing for me here, is the unit cost on the food side, not the drink side, but food. But yeah, it's just the day-to-day costs of, like, since April with the minimum wage, the PAYE, the rates relief being cut back. That's the same that we're all trying to meet in this industry. So they're the day-to-day things that you juggle or try and meet and try and just keep tabs on, spending time looking at your costs more than anything. But, you know, there's definitely those who've got it worse.
So for people who don't know about the Bernadetti family, just can you say a few words?
Of course. My uncles and aunties, as I say, a generation of customers, but we're a generation of generations of restaurateurs. My uncles and aunties started working in this business late 60s, set up the original, the Don Pasquale, on the Market Square in late 72 from the first floor. Where they purchased the Seven Star Grill, and then the June 73, where they opened the Don Pasquale on the ground floor. So they had the ground floor of the Don Pasquale, and then the Italian kitchen on the first floor. But there was uncles and aunties, their grandparents, their generations in there, and then within the Cambridge scene, the other family sites. My uncle has just retired from La Mimosa, which is now Byron's Bear, those guys, but he's just retired. He's 76 now. Uncle Prosper has been retired a little while, but his son, my cousin, is still at the Plough at Coton, where I hailed from myself. Other cousin is at the Margarita on Moreland Street. As a family, we've been on that site since 1984, 85. It was John Louise then, back then the French, and turned into La Margarita in 1990. So it's and myself here now at the Rupert Brook. So, you know, there's a few of my nieces and nephews. Not my children helping out, but there's another generation down the line, maybe, hopefully. I don't know if I want them to be getting involved in this industry too much, but maybe. But, you know, we've got a few places still going and maybe a few places yet to come. I don't see myself moving from here. I will be here for the long term. I've done plenty of moving around. This is me here, but doesn't mean there might another year's time where we sit again, another review, there might be something else.
Indeed. Well, listen to this space. Yes. Thank you so much, Pasky.
Thank you.
And how do you like your oysters, Sue?
Well, very much au naturel. I don't like them with Tabasco. I think that ruins the taste.
I do as well. The great thing about oysters is somehow the taste of the sea.
The taste of the sea, exactly. And I sometimes have it with a little, you know, shallots and vinegar or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I just like them as they are. Perfect.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember quite a long time ago, a year and a half ago maybe, you did a feature about somebody who used to come to Cambridge. Was he called something like Wilf the Fish or something?
Something like that.
And he used to take his fish or seafood to a pub in Barton and also to the Cavendish Arms.
That's right, the Hoops in Barton, that's right,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said he was going to set up by himself.
Yes.
But I've not heard anything of you.
Yes, I have not heard anything. He's vanished up his own oyster, as far as I'm aware.
Poor chap.
I know. His oysters were good. His oysters were excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, well, time for a bit more news now, and we begin with market news. The last Friday of the month is Foodie Friday at Ely Market, with street food sellers in attendance, and that runs from 4 p.m. till 8:30, and there is a large covered seating area.
And there's the farmers market in Ely every second and fourth Saturday too. So whenever Flavour is broadcast on a Saturday, there's a farmers market in Ely. And other farmers markets coming up are the Grandstands tomorrow, St Ives on the 2nd of August, St Neots on the 9th of August, and Caxton on the 10th of August. And looking ahead, the next Papworth Community Market is the 11th of October.
Heath Fruit Farm has Golden Gauges, Opal and Santa Subertus plums on sale at its kiosk outside the farm in Bluntisham, and that's Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And there may be some of the last of this year's apricots there too.
There's a Cambridge Biodiversity and Regenerative Food Festival coming up. That's on the 27th of September on Parker's Peace. Now, this is a free event, and there will be a collection of regenerative growers, bakers, makers, street food vendors, community groups and workshops. You can follow it on Instagram at RegenFoodsUK. Now, the organisers are inviting exhibitors to attend if they match the focus of the event, which includes regenerative, organic and agroecological food production, organic gardening and heritage seeds and plants, fermented and preserved foods. Also, street food vendors with a sustainability focus are welcome too. There's an application form to fill in on the Regenerative Foods website if you're interested.
And finally, let's peer into Congratulations Corner. And in there are the people from Francette's Bistro in Mill Road, because that's been included in the Good Food Guide's 100 Best Local Restaurants for 2025. So congratulations to them.
Coming shortly on today's Flavour, we find out about the Street Food Trucks Collective that aims to help both venue hosts and street food providers to bring more street food to you. Rosie Sykes has some jam-making ideas, including what not to do if your fruit is precious. And we'll find out about how you can have a free holiday in this country or abroad by volunteering on an organic farm. And that's after the break in 2 minutes' time. Don't go away.
Cambridge Radio.
The Addenbrookes Charitable Trust raises funds for Addenbrookes and the Rosie, as well as the planned cancer and children's hospitals. In a new monthly show, we'll tell you about the people involved with this much-loved hospital charity.
The number of people I talk to who just phone in, make a donation, who equally have these amazing stories to tell.
Gavin Richards and Danny Smith speak to the medical professionals, the caregivers, and the inspiring fundraisers.
And that's enabled 200 more patients to be seen every month, and it's a bright, lovely and spacious surroundings with specialist equipment.
Acts Amazing People, online whenever you want, and Sunday at 12 on Cambridge Radio.
If you're over 60, now's the time for luxury retirement at Rangeford's Strawberry Fields in Stapleford. Make friends in their vibrant community. There's a restaurant and bar with a gym, swimming pool and full clubhouse facilities. Worry-free retirement at Strawberry Fields in Stapleford. Take a tour of their show apartments and make it your place to call home.
Rangefordvillages.co.uk. Exclusively for over 60s.
And welcome back to Flavour. Earlier in the week, I welcomed Anthy into our studios here in Gwydir Street. Anthy is part of the Papas Locus Street Food team, and that won the Velvet Magazine Street Food Provider of the Year award last year and was a finalist in Velvet's Suffolk Awards this year. But she was in our studios to talk about the Cambridge Food Truck Collective, and I asked her what it was all about.
It's a group of vans that we have come together, and we're now making a call out to other vans to join us in order to form a group and also be able to go to the people who organize events at their workplaces or their neighborhoods, people who want food trucks near them, and to give them access to vans that they don't normally have access to. So we would bring a variety of vans, like, for them to choose from. We can do stuff like create a rotation for them and help with the documentation and anything they need, or even just educate them into creating their own events and try to build a good relationship.
So you can do a lot.
Managers, yeah.
You can do a lot of their work for them. You've got this. You're in contact with the vans. You're in contact with.
Yeah, exactly.
And they don't have to go to each one individually. Yes. They come to you, and you.
And the good thing being, us being a collective, means that we're not looking to make a profit out of it. So we would not be charging food trucks a commission to do this work and getting them into those pitches.
Right, so some pitches do charge commission, do they?
Most pitches charge commissions, and that inevitably leads into prices getting higher for the customer. We thought that a better way of doing this, both respecting the customer and the traders, is to have an agreement with venue managers that if we manage their rotation, then we can pass the saving on to the customer.
When you say venue managers, what sort of venues are we talking about?
So sometimes it might be a case of a pub wanting the pop-ups and they don't want to do the managing themselves. Sometimes it's about councils, parish councils, wanting like a series of food trucks that they want in their neighbourhood. Other times it's about companies who want like a regular rotation of food trucks for lunches. It can be all sorts of things.
That sounds very helpful.
Yeah.
And it brings a greater variety.
Absolutely.
And it gives, a better income. It gives you the possibility of trading more frequently.
Yes. And also, yes, exposure is a thing. But also, for us, it's also about the customer getting more access to more vans, getting more representation of prices as well. So all customers have something to buy.
Are you able to say what other traders are interested in this?
I can't give you a list now. We are a group of vans. I know that when we first approached Food Vans, we sent out about 25 emails and we had about an 80% positive response. So we formed kind of a core group and we're now calling out for more traders to join us. And obviously we're starting with food trucks, but there's been quite a lot of interest from coffee trucks, ice cream trucks, and also market stalls. Face similar issues and who would want to contribute to this positive change.
Yeah, that sounds good. There used to be an issue, I know it happened in Cambridge and I'm wondering if it still happens, mm-hmm. of people who were particularly setting up by themselves and on the street by themselves, mm-hmm. being intimidated or even being asked for sort of protection, in inverted commas, protection money. Does that still happen, do you know?
This is not that I know of. Not that I know of, fortunately.
Yeah.
No.
I remember Jack of Jack's Gelato being sort of intimidated off his pitch when he set up outside the Botanic Gardens.
Mm.
But that sort of thing doesn't seem to go on anymore.
It hasn't happened in the last 8 years that I've been in the food drug business with my husband. And I'm very happy that it hasn't, actually.
I think we've talked quite a lot about, or I've been thinking in my mind when you've been talking, I've been thinking about pitches in Cambridge.
Mm.
But is it the same difficulty present itself in outside Cambridge, in South Cambridge?
Definitely. Big developments, big residential developments are places where food trucks always want to pitch at. And we want to avoid the gatekeeping of those pitches as much as possible.
What do you mean by gatekeeping?
So we want to avoid that, like, only a certain group of trucks appear. So we want to work with the developers or the councils on site to get access for more trucks.
Yeah.
And give them more variety, give them more representation, have more diversity in the cuisines that the residents will be able to get access to. And also give more small independent businesses the chance to trade.
Yes, well, that's what we want.
Yeah, and then like the goal of the collective in those actions is like to let the food do the talking, because as in many industries, many times it is about who you know, and right. that's how you get like opportunities to work. But we want to put the food at the forefront.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the food just very briefly.
Yeah.
If Papas Locus turns up, what sort of food can we get from you? What would you recommend particularly?
Well, we are known for our Canadian poutine with real cheese curds that our Canadian customers love, and not just Canadians. For us, it's definitely our poutine and our fried chicken that we're known for.
Right, okay. And where are you, where do you normally operate?
We do not operate on a specific pitch regularly, so we pop around.
So we just need to check your Instagram.
You need to check our Instagram and our Facebook on a weekly basis, yeah.
Right, and talking about Instagram, how do people find you, find the collective on Instagram?
So the collective is on Instagram and Facebook under Cambridge Food Truck. And it is aimed to get food truckers to join, but also venue managers to get in contact with us in case they want to build up a rotation of trucks, or they want to assign us like the management of food truck rotation, and also individuals like, you know, that want to hire a food truck. So we can act as an intermediary that takes no commission. We're happy to just put people together and get everyone the food that they love.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. Anthony, thank you very much for coming in. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was Anthony from Papas Locus and founder of the Cambridge Street Food Collective.
That's Supercharge with Wine, 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 taking us into today's wine news. Ben at King Street Cellar has a tasting of summer picnic wines with some hidden gems on the 31st of July from 7 to 9 p.m. The cost is £30. King Street Cellars is also starting a book and wine club, which begins on the 7th of August with Hotel du Lac by Anita Bruckner, along with three wines that will match the mood. Tickets are available from the King Street Cellar website.
The Three Rivers tasting at the Wine Rooms in Hills Road didn't happen this week because of illness, so it's been rescheduled to Thursday the 31st of July, and that starts at 7 p.m. as usual. The three rivers concerned are the Rhone, the Loire and the Garonne. And looking ahead at the Wine Rooms, on the 16th of September there is a Chateau Sarah tasting, which features wines from Lebanon's Bekaa Valley, and that's with host Michael Karam.
Cambridge Wine Merchants has a tasting of Spanish wines with Steve Hovington of the Cambridge Wine Academy, and that's at the Cherry Hinton Road branch. It's on the 6th of August and it costs £35.
The next tasting at Gutter and Stars, Cambridge's own winery in French's Road, is on the 14th of August, when there will be a tasting of their wines from the 2022, 2023 and 2024 vintages. And that's the wine tasting news for today.
Now, this is a time of year when there is lots of fruit ripening, and if you grow your own, you may very well have a glut of it. Now, one way of preserving it so that you can enjoy it all the year round is by making jam. And here with some advice as to what to do and what not to do is Rosie Sykes, who talks about blackcurrant and peach jam.
With peaches, I often would put a couple of the peach leaves in if I was making peach jam. Peach and raspberry is a lovely jam combination. The peach leaves, I think you probably know, they smell of almonds as well. So by using the leaves, you get a lovely sort of bit of almondy flavour in there. Peach and rose is lovely as well. I was lucky enough to get some mulberries last year, which make an absolute wonderful jam. Just very simply mulberries. I don't think you should put anything else with them, really. Blackcurrants make a lovely jam, and blackcurrant leaves are really, really nice. They taste very lemony. But I've done blackcurrant and mint is rather nice. Again, but with that, I did the big stem of mint while I was cooking it. And then I actually finely chopped some fresh mint and stirred it in just before I put it in the jars.
On the subject of sugar, weight for weight for things like rhubarb, what about sweeter things like strawberries or raspberries or apricots? You'd use less sugar?
Yeah, I would, but I wouldn't go much below sort of 700 for a kilo, just because otherwise you're never going to get a set. You're just going to struggle to get any kind of a set, even with a jam sugar, unless you boil it until One of my favourite jam stories, one must always have a jam story, mustn't they, was that my sister, my middle sister was really into kind of health food and stuff. And we had a peach tree at the house that we all grew up in. And I remember every year we'd go out and see if there are any peaches, and there really very rarely were, sadly. But one year there were about 20 peaches or something like that. And she brought them in a bit early and she ripened on the windowsill and she really looked after them. And then she said, I'm going to make jam with them. And she found some sort of cranks, very sort of natural cooking recipe to follow that required practically no sugar. But instead, what it required was sort of so many hours of boiling. And I can remember at the end, she produced half of a jar of this sort of brown tar-like substance. It was the peach jam from all these peaches that we'd all kind of looked at and thought, oh, I'd love to eat one of those. But no, we weren't allowed near them because they were going to make amazing jam, of which there was probably a teaspoon each of tar-like substance.
Oh, dear. And did the tar-like substance taste nice?
I don't think I remember. I think I was so cross that I couldn't taste anything, probably, knowing me. I was probably only about 10. So you have to get the balance right. And also the thing is, if you take the sugar down, it's not going to preserve it. So it's really just becomes a coulis.
Oh, thanks to Rosie Sykes. What a story. Are you a jam maker, Sue?
Well, not jam so much, but jellies. I really like making jellies because they're much more flexible, because you can have them with both savoury and sweet.
So what's the difference between a jam and a jelly then?
Well, you still use sugar, but you have to strain it. So you need a jelly bag. You strain it.
Right.
So medlar jelly is my favourite. I have a friend who gives me medlars. But at the moment, they're in my freezer from last year because I just didn't get around to doing it.
Yeah. There's not many people that really like me. Medlars, so I'm impressed.
Well, no, it makes a very nice jelly, so yeah, it does.
Right, okay. Yep. What about, I was thinking just before, you and I think, have both interviewed Monica Askey, who's a fruit historian, but was also very interested in fruit. And in her book about the orchards of the East of England, she has a recipe for fruit leathers. Have you ever made a fruit leather?
My daughter's made a fruit leather, actually, and she's made some rather successful ones because they've got a very prolific apple tree in their garden, and so she's made apple leather, and it's lovely.
I should think there's a very strong flavour because there's not much sort of liquid in there,
no,
is there?
No, it's really, really good. No, it's lovely.
Mm, right, I shall have a go.
And there's the music signalling time for news from social media.
Well, I'm not ready for news from social media, unfortunately. Briar Farm, which we featured on our programme a few weeks ago, which is one of the most memorable places I've ever visited. It's just in Willingham. It is possible to get some of their produce, and it's going to be on sale at the North Stowe Tap and Social tomorrow, Sunday, from 10 until 2. I rather suspect they'll have sold out before 2, because there won't be a lot of it. Flourish Farm Shop is expanding its delivery area for its Flourish produce boxes. Round here, they're going to be going to CB8 in addition to all the other Cambridge postcodes. And then there's a lot of postcodes in and around Enfield, London, Chelmsford and so on. And also it says, we're thrilled to welcome the Finn Boys in Cambridge as a collection point. If you're local, it's a very convenient spot to pick up your Flourish favours while supporting another brilliant independent business. Collection times are from 9 till 12 and 3 till 5, Fridays and Saturdays. So, an easy way of getting produce from Flourish Farm Shop. The Food Museum in Stowmarket allows you to make your own retro pudding at their School Dinners Pudding Workshop. I think of Sago at this point.
Yeah.
And, A nostalgic hands-on treat for all the family where you can swap stories, stir up memories and enjoy museum entry included in your ticket. That's every Thursday, Friday and Saturday across the summer holidays and it's fine for ages aged 5 and above, but under 12s must be accompanied by an adult. Right, that's the news from the social media.
Yeah, makes me think of semolina and white custard.
Oh, blimey. Sorry, I always forget to say this. We, Flavour, are on social media. We're on Instagram at FlavourCam. What have we got? How much time have we got?
Well, haven't we got woofing next?
Yeah, oh, yes, we have.
I believe
yes.
We've got woofing. So, if you're wondering what to do for a holiday this summer, but haven't a lot of money to spare, you can consider woofing days. Dee Fisher explains.
So, it's a way of offering volunteer labour on organic farms in exchange for your accommodation and meals.
Right, well, you're woofing at the moment on an allotment. Have you woofed elsewhere?
Oh, I have. My daughter and I travelled around the UK and Europe for 4 months last year, and it was a great way to be able to do it. We spent about 2 months in Cambridge last year. We woofed on a fantastic organic farm up near Peterborough for a little while, which was very different. It was an organic salad production sort of place. So very, very different operation. We learned really quite different things there. But I think the best place we stayed was actually on the mainland just outside Venice. Stayed in a little gypsy caravan on an organic farm there. And they have a constant rotation of woofers who work there all the time. Wonderful, wonderful place.
Wow, it does sound good. Can you stay as long as you like, or is there a limit?
Do you know, each individual owner or farm has their option about what they want. And so some places would prefer only to have casual weekend workers come in, so they tend to take people from the local area. Others really varied. A lot of the time you just negotiate on with the owner on what you're looking for and what they're looking for, what dates are available.
Right. And you get accommodation for nothing, do you?
Yes.
Now, in return for your labour.
Yes.
And
so
food as well.
The accommodation is not always as grand as I have in Cambridge.
Oh.
You know, sometimes it's a tent. But but they are required to provide accommodation that's reasonable and they feed you. And, you know, we tend to, you usually do, the usual requirement with woofing is that you work 6 hours a day for 5 days a week, and then your weekends are your own or whatever. And so we don't make our host feed us at the weekend.
Yeah. Do growing techniques differ?
They do. And also management techniques. You know, working for the farm up in Peterborough, it was a much more regimented organization. We were up at 6 every day and really had to work very, very hard to earn our breakfast. And it was just extremely structured. And working for an individual as we are now, it's much more relaxed. We can, you know, he's quite forgiving if we have to go to an appointment or whatever. We can kind of come and go and we make it up later. So those things do come into it. But I think the greatest thing about woofing has been the opportunity to learn. Because I was a very experienced gardener when I started this. I'd had my own quarter acre plot for 20 years. When I lived in the UK before, but I had never grown much in the way of vegetables. And so it's been an enormous opportunity to learn so much about just the, you know, the cultivation methods that are needed and the pests and diseases that are different from things that I've dealt with before. So it's been an incredible learning opportunity.
And is it quite serious? I mean, you know, one of the things that sort of historically British students have done is gone grape picking in France and sort of, I think, drunk a lot of wine and had a great time, you know. And there's been a lot of bonhomie and, you know, it's been very communal and friendly. Is there any of that, or is it?
Oh, good
is it
heavens! There is everything of that. When we came to Cambridge last year, we just came straight into a ready-made community, There's a huge and very warm and welcoming community that are looking at living life sustainably in this area. And we tapped straight into that community. They took us to their hearts. We were at every party and drinking all the beer. And, you know, we were like part of the family. And when we've come back this year, we've been welcomed with open arms. People couldn't wait to see us again. And it's really just been lovely to come back into that community.
Oh, that's really nice.
You know, we've made lifelong friends.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. What sort of age range do woofers sort of span?
Well, you have to be, to sign up as an individual, you have to be at least 18. And as long as, I guess, you're physically able, I don't think there's any upper limit. If you're traveling with a parent or guardian, you can woof at a younger age. So my daughter was 16 when we were traveling last year, but she had to sign up through my membership. And so there are some places that won't accept children. I know people who woof as families, so they take their much younger children and they'll stay on a fruit farm or whatever, and it becomes like a combined family vacation and everybody works.
So you could spend a summer holiday doing that?
Absolutely. You could spend your whole life doing this. I'm kind of tempted.
Right, and so where have you woofed outside of Europe? In you say in North America?
I haven't woofed in North America, right. But I know a lot of people who have. And so one of my friends was, we lived in the Canadian Rockies, which is renowned for having no topsoil whatsoever. And so she went off way the other side of Canada to the real grain farming area. And she was running combine harvesters and all that sort of thing. And it was a very, very different experience. And working a lot with animals, which is nice for people that appeals to. She has a great love of horses. And so that was a really good opportunity for her to work with livestock.
Right. Yeah. So it's really varied.
Extremely varied.
And you can woof, you say, anywhere. So you go and woof in, I don't know, Singapore or Thailand,
yeah.
Or...
as long as they have agriculture going on, yeah. Yes. You know, I know people who've woofed in Greece and Italy, Estonia. You know, there's just... You choose where you want to go and then you start to look.
Right. But do you need to know much?
Do you know? You really don't. It's an asset if you do. And some places, some advertisers will be very specific about the skill sets that they're looking for. It doesn't mean that they won't take you if you don't have those skill sets. But for a particular summer, for example, they might have a task that needs to be done. They might want to build an outbuilding, for example, that summer. So they're looking to have woofers at some point in that time who have the skills that would help them to do that. So it doesn't mean they won't take anyone else, but they'll be very specific about what they're looking for. Others will take anybody. And you know, you do what you can. You learn a great deal. And you work together, so.
Yeah, so it sounds good. So to find out about it, you look at the WWOOF website.
Yes, right. .org.uk, I think it is.
Right.
But there's a site for every country. So if you just Google WWOOF, then you'll get the site that will tell you all of the different countries' websites. You have to go to each country's website to register or to apply for placements in
those countries.
But there's
a link on that main one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the best thing I could possibly say is don't hesitate, because I know people who've woofed in Italy. They did not share a word of language with the people they were working with and had the best experience of their lives. It was absolutely tremendous. They were within a walk of the sea and they worked hard, they ate fantastically, had a wonderful holiday tucked in between, and again, made lifelong friends. By the end of it, they, you know, they were communicating beautifully, and they've been back two or three times since then.
Oh, wonderful.
It is. It is wonderful. Right. I don't have a bad thing to say about it.
Right. Thanks very much, Dee.
It's my pleasure.
Yeah, that was Dee Fisher. And the woofing website, WWOOFING, woofing website, is there ready for you to investigate. Right, well, we've got a few minutes and we have a copy of The Guardian's Feast magazine for Saturday, the 26th of July. Felicity Cloke has a masterclass on piri-piri chicken, a Portuguese dish with its roots in the former colonies of Angola and Mozambique. Sue, that you're interested in this one by, shall I try and say her name?
Oh, you try first.
Well, I have practiced, but I've, you know. Cynthia Shanmugaringam. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah,
anyway,
indeed.
What does synth have to say?
Well, all about Sri Lankan barbecuing, and it sounded really interesting. This lady has a restaurant called Rambutan, and...
Oh, does it say where it is?
Yes, indeed, in London SE1.
And, oh, right, Westminster. Blimey.
Yeah. So green coconut rice with tomato and onion sambal. And sambals, really interesting sort of spicy things. And then what really piqued my interest was black chicken with tempered parsley. And I was thinking, what is tempered parsley when
indeed.
It's at home?
So what have you discovered?
Well, it's with coconut oil, mustard seed, cumin and fennel, and curry leaves and parsley, and shallots and garlic cloves and cider vinegar. And I've got all of those things.
Right.
So, and I've also
right, we'll come
got,
round to yours tonight then.
Yep, so I've got some chicken. I've just got to make my black spice mix as well. And that sounds really interesting. I'm going to take a picture of that.
Right. Well, you can get it online if you actually have.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
I actually bought it. Wasn't there something else that you were interested
oh,
in?
Oh, yes,
well?
Some interesting salads.
Some salads.
Yes, some salads.
From Alice Zaslavsky.
Oh, we're doing the words today, aren't we?
From Georgia.
From Georgia, yes. And.
Oh, we're running out of time.
Well, very nice dishes, which I'm going to have a proper look at when we've finished.
Righty ho.
And there's Green Onions taking us into our job section, and we begin with vacancies at Stapleford Granary for baristas, kitchen and hospitality staff. The minimum age is 18 and the jobs include weekend and evening shifts. Hospitality experience is welcome, but it's not essential. So just send your CV to Tamlyn, that's T-A-M-L-Y-N, Tamlyn at stapleforgranary.org.uk.
Cambridge City Food Bank needs two people to act as Food Bank Welcome Centre team leaders to be available on Tuesday or Wednesday mornings each week. You'll lead teams who greet people and provide food at one of the Food Bank's Cambridge locations. More details are on the Cambridge City Food Bank website.
Flourish in Hildesheim wants a bookkeeper for about a day a week. For more information or to apply, email office at flourishproduce.co.uk.
And that takes us to the end of the programme for today. We're here on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon and repeated on Mondays at 2 p.m. And don't forget, we are available as a podcast from all the usual places. And coming up next on Cambridge Radio is Kevin Hunt with 2 hours of music celebrating the art of songwriting.
We'll be back on the 9th of August with lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. But until then,
goodbye. Goodbye.